As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
The construction of the dream.
Fire away.
9 to noon.
The game is over.
P.A.
There are many, many positives I can get out of this game.
Are you kidding me?
That's a dumb question.
Allen, a superstar, bursting onto the scene.
That's a loser, Bill. That's what that is.
Mission Minneapolis. Hashtag Faith Radio.
Hold on to your butts.
Hey, have a seat for a second.
You know, I was in the AFC North for 6 years. I know how they play defense over there and the physicality that they play with. So I knew it was going to be a grind.
Mission Minneapolis.
Attitude, discipline, playing a close attention to the details, and effort, not giving up.
You turn me on.
Flacco shotgun, two receivers left. He's back to pass. He's hit, and he's stopped by Daniil Hunter. Marcus Sherrills retreats to the 17, heads near side. He gets the 20, 25, 30. Marcus turns it up far side 40. Has Sam Cook to beat. He slowed him, and Marcus is taken down. 37-yard line. It's a 44-yard return by main man Marcus. Snap spot. High from 52. It's up and the game is tied. Keenum takes the snap, gives it to Murray. Runs into Brandon Williams, gets away from him, sprints up the middle, 30, 35, 40. Stiff arms, Tony Jefferson at the 50. Weaves his way to the right to the Ravens 40. And by far, Latavius Murray's most explosive moment wearing the purple and gold runs the Vikings to a first down.
That's what we do, baby. Viking style.
Kick is up, and Kai's kick is good.
The best thing about it is we've been stopping the run and making teams one-dimensional, and then we can, you know, probably the strength of our defense, you know, is being able to get after the quarterback.
Flacco flustered and sacked by Anthony Barr back at the 12-yard line. A blitzing Anthony Barr buries Joe Flacco, and Sam Cook is in the pot. Vikings blitz. Flacco hit. Flacco about to be destroyed, and he's down. Everson Griffin, part of a sack. On third and nine, screen left to Buck Allen, and he's smashed by Anthony Barr. Back at the 40-yard line. First and 10 Ravens from their own 45. Flacco back to pass. He's going to roll out to the right. It's a strip sack, and it's picked up by a member of the Ravens. It's Everson Griffin with his second sack today. One receiver right, Thielen in motion to the left of Case Keenum. Tailback Latavius Murray gets the call. Sprints up the middle, 25-20, 15-10, 5, touchdown! Latavius Murray's first touchdown with the Vikings kicks the lead to 18-6.
You know, he ran with physicality, he had good vision and hole. He was able to slide step some guys, you know, made the safety miss on the touchdown run.
Snap spot. Horvath kicking to the west side of U.S. Bank Stadium, and he splits the uprights and kicks the Minnesota Vikings to a 9-6 lead. And Kai Horvath is in for his fourth field goal try today. This will be a 43-yard try to the east side of U.S. Bank Stadium, left hash. He's 3 of 3 today, 9-6 Vikings. Snap spot. Kick. Good.
Today felt the best as far as our operation and my ball contact. It just felt smooth all day. Kind of felt like, you know, we do in practice. It's just starting to feel easier and easier every time now.
34-yard try, left hash. Snap spot. The kick is up, and it is good. A high five for Kai Horvath. He has made 5 field goals today. Kai Horvath with a 32-yard field goal try between the hash marks to the west side of U.S. Bank Stadium. Kai is 5 of 5.
Snap spot. Lightfooted footed Kai Forbath. Kick is up, and it is good. And Kai Forbath is 6 of 6 kicking field goals today.
You know, like I said, I take it one kick at a time. Anytime I get called to go on the field and help the team score points, I try to help. And, we got 6 tries, and then I made them. So it was fun to be part of this. It was a fun team.
As the Vikings have won 3 consecutive games and remain Kings of the North. Yes! 9 to noon radio production on a Wintersville Monday from the KFAM Bryan Heating and Cooling Studios. Good morning. I am Paul Allen and the radio station FM 100.3 The Fam. The master mixer of the alive and kicking, very much alive and kicking, Eric Nordquist, producer of 9 to Noon. Good morning, Rube Nation.
Wintersville sounds better in FM.
What'd you say?
Wintersville sounds better in FM.
Friday night, the Wolves dropped an L on Ricky. Saturday, Guardsy's team went on the grind but found the money against the Fighting Illini. Saturday, courtesy of big boy Alex Stalock, the Wild won at Calgary. Yesterday, as you just heard via the montage, the Minnesota Vikings improved to 5-2, defeating the Baltimore Ravens. And last night, Andrew Wiggins at the buzzer. I mean, bang, 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 bang. Yeah, baby.
Hell yeah.
Wintersville sounds better in FM. And we will chat about all, if not most of those topics during the presentation today. The West Bend Mutual Insurance list goes a little bit something like this. Pete Bursich, analyst, Vikings Radio Network in Studio 935. Justin Guard, sideline analyst, Golden Gophers Radio Network, 1015. Border battle for the Fat Pig this weekend. And speaking of border battles, David Sinekin, the head cheese, at TC Head Cheese via Twitter. His weekly stop into the Love Covenant transpires at about 11:35. Some Andrew Wiggins and Minnesota Timberwolves celebratory love around the corner. But first, a question. Nordo?
Yes.
Do you love games at the House of Pain?
Of course I do.
No spill blood, but this hard-hitting Vikings defense is opening eyes around the National Football League. Anthony Barr's game yesterday was an absolute thing of beauty. 10 tackles and a man possessed on a defense full of demons. Anthony wants his money. Anthony saw the likes of Harry the Hitman, Everson Griffin, and Xavier Rhodes get paid. Anthony, hit with, by some, an enigmatic tag during certain stages of his career, he wants his money. Anthony's like, what about me? What about me? Everson sacks the quarterback every single game. Oh my God, Everson. 9 on the season. We have perhaps multiple, but definitely a singular defensive player of the year candidate. His name, Everson Griffin. Come on!
Yes.
Come on! Why you got to be so mean? Question. Who is our offensive MVP through 7 games? When we take phone calls a couple of hours from now, we will re-present the question to the masses. 909, good morning. I mean, the defense has been the identity of this team. Everson Griffin, why you got to be so mean? Everson Griffin, defensive player of the year candidate. Hitman, 3 interceptions. Nobody ever throws at X. Barr is demonized. Kendricks gets like 11 tackles every game. Linval's freaking starving every Sunday and just eats up everybody. Daniil had a sack yesterday. But what about the offensive MVP? Something on which to chew during the 9 to noon radio show. And in fact, you can send emails to booth@kfan.com. They land in the Bradshaw and Bryant inbox. I don't have an answer for the offensive MVP through the first 7 games.
I do.
But I do know we are Kings of the North. What's your answer, Yazay?
My answer, and I don't think that it's close. I think it has to be Case Keenum. I think it has to be a guy that stepped in after a fantastic week one by Sam Bradford, goes down with the knee injury. I know the numbers aren't glitzy.
But his passer rating was 67.7 yesterday.
Absolutely awful, and it started with the pick that may have been Laquan's fault trying to tip it past Carr's hands into his own arms. It was a failure on many levels. But his ability to step in and the performances that he's had throughout this season in victories, I think that it is a no-brainer. I know Adam Thielen's in the mix. I get that. And Wade Jerick McKinnon, you know, he stepped up in a couple of games. The answer is Case Keenum, and there is no other answer.
What about a member of the Minnesota Moving Company?
Riley Reiff is fantastic, but they operate as a group. If I wanted to pick an offensive group MVP, I would pick the likes of the rookie Pat Elflein and Riley Reiff stepping in great fashion. And even Danny Isadora and Rashad Hill needing some reps yesterday.
Mike Remmers might not have allowed a pressure two consecutive games.
And that is super weird considering what some of us may have thought about Remmers coming in into the season. But the answer is Case, and those that argue with me can do so on the phone lines later today.
Booth at KFAN.com. Bradshaw and Brian inbox. I'd answer that question if you're interested. We have won three in a row and get Cleveland and London on Sunday. Are Rubes cool with the 8:30 a.m. Central start? Yours truly will be across the pond in Great Britain for a 1:30 London start. Vikings football Sunday, 6:30 in the morning. FM 100.3 The Fan this Sunday. Network affiliates, including those of you listening via the vast and ever-expanding Fan Radio Network. 7:30 a.m. for a Vikings football Sunday. 8:30 a.m. football Sunday, you say?
It's perfect. I'm going to be feeding sausage and French toast to my girls, drinking hot coffee, get the game out of the way. By the time the rest of the NFL gets its bleep together and starts a normal game day Sunday, we'll already be setting up post-game interviews and celebrating, hopefully, a 6-2 team into the bye. I love the early kickoff.
We beat the Bears in Trubisky's debut, the Packers with Brett Hundley, and a Ravens offense that is as bad as I've ever seen with Joe Flacco leading the way. Now we get Cleveland. DeShone Kizer, Cody Kessler, Kevin Hogan, Bernie Kosar, like it matters against this defense. Cleveland, I think, took an L yesterday with stalwart left tackle Joe Thomas. Triceps injury. Don't expect him to play when we play at Twickenham. The Vikings should be heavily favored to go to 6-2 into the bye. Then it's Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff, Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, Andy Dalton, and so on and so on and so on. That's when the real fun begins. Fans at the House of Pain seem to enjoy the game yesterday, and those traveling to London will be loud and proud. Count me in for that journey as we paint the city purple and gold. Eric Nordquist is the producer, and I'm Paul Allen. Some Minnesota Timberwolves love off the drama last night when 9 to noon continues from the KFAN Bryant Heating and Cooling Studios. Good morning. This is The Fan.
You're listening to PA.
What a pleasure it is to be on hashtag Faith Radio with all of these believers this morning.
On The Fan.
Programming on The Fan also brought to you in part by Bradshaw and Bryant.
9:18, Monday staple. It is the Warner Stellion Weekend Whip Around on lead vocals, Miko Nordo.
24-17 on homecoming for Gopher football. Demery Croft only completed 5 passes, but the W counts as Illinois loses to Minnesota. Minnesota gets their first Big Ten win of the season, improved to 4-3, and meet up in Iowa City this Saturday with the pig on the line.
JG, sideline analyst, Gophers Radio Network, 1 hour from now, knows more about the production than us.
Minnesota Wild secured their second win of the season on Saturday in Calgary, down 2-1 in the third period, notched 3 unanswered goals from Suter, then Spurgeon, then new guy Winnick to win 4-2. Big homestand starts tomorrow. Vancouver Canucks in town.
Big boys back. Alex Stalock, 18 brilliant saves in the first period. Calgary brought the A game in the first period. Big boy was ready. We were able to fend the challenge, get the dub. 6-game homestand begins tomorrow, 9 to noon, with its first 2017 box in the box. Halloween, which I believe in the business we say is a week from tomorrow.
That's spooky. The Lions, let's look at the NFC North. Lions on a bye week, they're 3-3. The Bears beat the Panthers at home, they get their third win. Mitchell Trubisky only completed 4 passes in the game, Packers lost at home to the Saints on an awful performance by Brett Hundley. No tiebreakers needed, PA. The Vikings are in first place by a game in the North.
Props to John Fox, Vic Fangio, and Lavelle Neal III. The Chicago Bears are 3-4. If there hadn't have been a couple of dropped passes in the end zone, game one, they put an L on Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons. This team has won consecutive games, winning at Baltimore and beating the Carolina Kitties at home, despite just 7 passes by Mitch Trubisky. Props to Wobble and his Chicago Bears.
And finally, the Howl, packed house at the fresh-faced Target Center, with the Wolves hosting Ricky Rubio's new team on Friday night. Tight victory for them. Then last night in Oklahoma City with the Thunder, thinking they had claimed victory in the final seconds, Andrew Wiggins from about 30 feet out took the win for the visiting Wolves. They're 2-1, and they host the Pacers tomorrow night.
Jamal Crawford on Friday night went to the Father Time card, draining shots all over the arena. The Jazz lost 3-point marksman Rodney Hood during the game. That played a big factor in the Timberwolves winning. Now the T-Wolves have won 2 consecutive, courtesy of the victory last night. And that's the Warner Stallion Weekend Whip Around. Hey, at Warner Stallion, there's a red tag clearance sale right now. 18-month financing is available. In fact, 0% interest is available right now. Save up to 60% on Rockstar appliances. WarnerStallion.com for the information. I love my Warner Stallion appliances, and you will too.
Butler's on him. Anthony for three. Get it! Get it! Thunder on the hot side! And Minnesota has no timeouts. So smart play here. Wiggins spots up for a deep three. He's got it! He scores it at the buzzer to give the Timberwolves the victory.
I can't say I've ever seen Tom Thibodeau pump his fist and jump a little after a win. Old school basketball fans will be familiar with the name Wes Unseld. Wesley Unseld was a diminutive center for the Washington Bullets, playing with Alvin Hayes and Kevin Greavy. And Unseld was a rebounding machine. I mean, kind of like Michael Cage before Michael Cage was Michael Cage, and Michael Cage is still Michael Cage. But see, Wes had a minimal vertical. Wes's vertical might have been 6 inches, but he always grabbed those rebounds because he was super tough. That was Thibodeau last night with the cutest baby vertical I've ever seen in my life. Main man pumping his fist after Andrew Wiggins drains a straightaway 27-foot-ish bank shot three-pointer, and the Minnesota Timberwolves win. Come on! Winnersville.
That was unbelievable.
Sounds better. In FM, I got this for you.
Yeah.
What a dramatic finish. We were the right side all game. Then Russell goes MVP on it. And OKC, after Westbrook is playing the MVP card, they run this inbounds play, and Carmelo to the left of the basket gets a clean look at a three, and he's Carmelo Anthony. Of course he's going to drain it, and he did. So now they're up by 2. We have no timeouts. Oh, my God. No timeouts for paralysis by overanalysis. Instead, we just got to play, and we got to go the distance of the court to put an L on OKC. It's like we're going to make it Loxy, L-OKC. They inbound the ball. Wiggins catches it, far side of the court. Karl Anthony Towns, in very selfless fashion, with a crushing pick on a Rube wearing a Thunder jersey. And it was a legal pick. It wasn't like Andrew Sandejo nearly decapitating Mike Wallace. It was a legal pick. Cat lays the pick. Here's Wiggins with time running out, and he drains a bank shot straight-on three-pointer. We win at Oklahoma City. The drama last night was unbelievable.
Drama unbelievable, and already just 3 games in, we're getting a taste of the excitement of this team. So frustrating to watch some of the things transpire on opening night and all the energy boost, and they're without Kawhi and Tony Parker, and you go down there, unfortunately, you get handed a loss. You forget that LaMarcus Aldridge is pretty good and the Spurs are pretty good. You come home Friday, new spot. And then last night, with Wiggins, who's becoming the shooter that we've all loved for him to be and continues to evolve, game-winning shot already under his belt from deep. It's unbelievable right now. Just through three games, it's so much fun.
Wolves have won two consecutive, beat Ricky Friday night. Jazz came back the next night and stifled the OKC and won a game. Oklahoma City, I swear, had like 87 or 89 points in that game. When you trot out Russell Westbrook, Carmelo Anthony, Paul George, and Steven Adams and score fewer than 90 points, that's because you run into an elite Quinn Snyder-led defensive system. A system we found a way to beat and managed on Friday night at Target Center for the home opener. Yet, on a back-to-back, Ricky's team drops an L on the OKC. So that was a legitimate win on Friday night, crowd loving it. Indiana's here tomorrow night. I think that's the crafty play if you want to see the new arena.
Ooh.
Kids in school, still Timberwolves basketball.
It is a weeknight, sure.
Mild buzz created off the Andrew Wiggins straightaway bank shot. Elite buzz created in the offseason. Target Center remodeling, cushy seats, Marnie Gellner. I still can't see the bad boy being packed on a Tuesday night in late October for Timberwolves basketball. So I think tomorrow evening, if you are a sports snob, and we cultivate sports snobs in the Covenant, that's the crafty play to see the new arena. The demise of Jeff Teague has been greatly exaggerated. Loved his leadership last night. Absolutely loved his quarterbacking skills a majority of the game. If we must go hardcore James Naismith on it, Jeff Teague and Andrew Wiggins both need to play better defense, likewise for Karl-Anthony Towns, for this team to continue to win and win and win again and win at a high level and get home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs. Tibbs has an emotional affair with Andrew Wiggins, and it seems very hot and steamy. It's like he loves him and pumps his fist when he wins the game with the straightaway bank, but I've seen him no fewer than three times screaming at Wiggins for leaving guys open in the corner to drain threes. Don't want to say it's a love-hate relationship because I don't think there's any facet of hate involved in that emotional affair, but that's what it is. Jimmy is not scoring a ton, but he's finding his way. Don't need to call him Jimmy Butler. Elite basketball minds know exactly who we're referencing when we say Jimmy. Or we could just call him the Bulldog. He's not scoring a ton, but he's finding his way within this complicated Tom Thibodeau system. 6 assists and rebounds last night and 5 steals on Friday. Jimmy was a thief on Friday night. Ain't scoring the way I expected Jimmy Butler to score here, but it's still very much a work in progress. Just like Oklahoma City. Russell Westbrook had like 3 points on Saturday night. It's because Carmelo's a gunner, and Paul George needs to get his shots too. So while said Thunder worked the kinks out of their operation, that's what the Timberwolves are doing to a certain extent when it comes to Jimmy Butler finding his way from a scoring standpoint. But with that defense and those rebounds and assists and steals, Jimmy the Bulldog has come to play. Timberwolves fans, it's time to... Because we're back.
You're listening to PA.
In those days, they wouldn't go to hell for $5 more like they do today.
On the Fan.
Arcade Fire. Infinite content 2017. Now I'm ready to start. October 29th, XL Energy Center. Unique concert experience not to be missed. Tickets on sale now at LiveNation.com or Ticketmaster.com. Arcade Fire. New album, Everything Now, coming soon.
One receiver right, Thielen in motion to the left of Case Keenum. Tailback Latavius Murray gets the call. Sprints up the middle, 25-20, 15-10, 5! Touchdown! Latavius Murray's first touchdown with the Vikings.
Vikings kicks the lead to 18-6.
The Analyst.
Pete Bursich, analyst, Vikings Radio Network, former player and coach for said purple and gold squad. Momentarily, but first, a reminder, Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood for the feast tomorrow. That's right, we have a bonus Tuesday feast. Paul Charchian is the co-host. PA in charge tomorrow, Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood from 9 to noon. Matt Burke will be on air, on site, on demand, and on fire at 10:55. Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood tomorrow. If you ain't doing anything, looking for a place to chill, Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood from 9 to noon tomorrow. In studio,
Bursich.
Latavius Murray scored the only touchdown for the Vikings yesterday. But let's begin with the identity of the squad, defense. Are you familiar with a Samuel Newton with
yes.
the Minnesota Vikings public relations staff?
Yes.
Sam Newton is an elite information dissemination mind, and he informed yours truly last evening. You see, when you're winning, it's easy to get into the minutia and start getting ready for next week. Sneak peek at next week via the minutia. Samuel Newton production. The Vikings have held opponents to 4 yards after catch, which is tops in the NFL. So we think back to that Steelers game, Martavis Bryant, when he wasn't freaking out and begging to be traded. He got loose a little bit. We've had some deep plays that have resulted in penalties. But nevertheless, Vikings have held opponents to 4 yards after catch, tops in the NFL. Your Minnesota Vikings have allowed 7 runs of 10 yards or more, which is fewest in the NFL. The defense, it's the best in the National Football League right now, isn't it?
It is. And the thing is, when you look at them and how they're ranked by yardage, they're not right at the top. And they're moving up. I mean, after a 208-yard performance yesterday, mm-hmm. they're going to be moving up. But they're not at the top. And so what does that mean? It just means they play, for the most part, mistake-free football.
Right.
They don't let guys get behind them. When you are ahead, you keep things in front of you.
Yeah.
They pressure at the right times. They very few missed tackles. There were a couple yesterday, which was the first time I think we've seen that all year. But for the most part, very few, if any, missed tackles. So
off that, Nordo's favorite site, Pro Football Focus, had a tweet this morning or last night. Anthony Barr, according to PFF, has missed one tackle all season. I mean, he's played a million plays. And according to said metric site, he's missed one tackle all season.
Yeah, they've been a very, very solid tackling bunch. They had a couple yesterday. Kendricks had a couple. I mean, so that's not, that's just what they do. It's a fundamentally sound defense. And even from a rush standpoint, very fundamentally sound with how the guys rush the passer. Mm-hmm. No one's selling out and letting the quarterback just get loose and scramble or step up. And that's some of that's Linval Joseph. Some of that's Tom Johnson. I mean, they're just playing very, very well as a group. And when you look at the defense and try to game plan against them, what are you going to do? I mean, what's the proverbial hole that you can go after?
Right.
What are we not good at? There isn't much. So they're playing at a really, really, really high level, and it's good to see.
Well, you know more about this than us. Now, you know, Zimmer gets here 2014, defense embarrassing in 2013. Zimmer takes the embarrassing presentation, makes it reputable in 2014. It gets better incrementally year by year, 15, 16, and now where we are. So in having guys like Harrison Smith, Everson Griffin, Brian Robinson, his entire run, you know, now you got Linval hungry for a few years, Daniil Hunter for 3, Tom Johnson for X amount, Barr and Kendricks have been around, Trey Wayne's 3, Xavier the whole run. I mean, that Sendejo the whole run.
Yeah.
So now stress or focus on the importance of having the same components with the same defense and the same trickery year after year after year after year. It's major,
it
isn't
is. It? It's extremely important, especially you haven't had that so much on offense, but we've had it on defense. And if you get a new system, you can implement it and get it in a year, but you can't really get into the meat and bones of the defense until year 2.
Yeah.
It takes that long. And now these guys are just fundamentally, they play this, because a scheme is fundamentals too. It's alignments, it's assignments, and it's technique. They've mastered all of those things. And another thing I was thinking about too, Paul, was we've had an interconference play. We're 7-3 right now since 2015. Ooh. And you look at teams like Baltimore, or you know, we're playing Cleveland coming up, Cincinnati. These are teams that Zimmer is very familiar with. And oh, by the way, Shermer is very familiar with.
Right.
So yesterday when Baltimore's lining up and doing all their crazy things that they do line it, you know, when they line up, I don't think we were taken off guard at all. And if there's one thing that stands out yesterday was pass protection. This is a good, solid pass rushing team. Coming into this game, they believe they had 16 sacks coming into this game.
They didn't
get close to Keenum at all.
Oh my God.
He scrambled a couple times.
Even with Hill and/or Isidora,
I was
going to
say,
Kane.
And with a third string right guard playing.
Left guard.
Right. So having that experience with these teams and having seen them before and knowing them very well outside of the division, outside of the conference, helps a ton as well. So I think that these AFC teams are not the enigma that they used to be, because our coaching staff knows them very well.
Adam Thielen, sure-handed, only receiver in the NFL to have at least 5 catches, 7 games this year. Vikings are 5-2. I posed a question atop the show, got some emails on it, some tweets, and I will reopen it at 11:15 when we take Vikings and sports-related calls. But the offensive MVP for this team nearing the midway point, Thibodeau identified Case Keenum as the offensive MVP. I would lean the way of Thielen because of his reliability, but for Thielen, Case needs to get it to him.
Right.
You know, and then where I can support the Case portion of the equation is when the quarterback goes down, if the next guy is substandard, the whole thing's over. Look at the Lambeau production.
Right.
I mean, granted, we're talking about, you know, going from Mick Jagger to the lead singer of Hanson, replacing the band and playing Wembley and nobody comes. Right. So I mean, it's a high-end example. But
well, remember what we said. We get him a week of practice. Let's see how he does. He's playing the Saints.
Yeah.
The Saints. 87 yards.
Who?
The guy from Green Bay.
Oh, Hundley.
Hundley yesterday.
Yeah, 87 yards.
Yeah, forget Hundley.
I mean, I'm just, you know.
I'm saying if the fall off from Bradford to Keenum is dramatic, then I mean, this defense can be as good as it is, but if Keenum's throwing the ball to the wrong team and, like, bleeping the whole thing up, you're not going to Slaughter.
Correct.
Okay, so now, you know, Teddy just came back. Bradford's knee is an L. So if Keenum is horrible, they're not going to go to a guy who 14 and a half months ago was a wide receiver in Northern Colorado. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
So, I mean, that I think that's a pretty strong side for Keenum being the offensive MVP.
Yeah, that's...
But I'm getting a lot of Thielen steam via emails and tweets.
Right.
And then now, from an offensive line standpoint, people are writing and or tweeting about Reef. Okay, Riley's been good. I don't think Remmers has a lot of pressure in 2 games. You know, in the rookie center Elfline...
He's played very well.
So, I mean, it's difficult to identify offensive MVP.
But that's a good thing, because they're not depending on a player offensively. It's a number of guys. I look at Thielen and what he did yesterday and how they were bending him back into the box to block on running plays.
Yeah, bend it like Beckham.
They did that quite a bit. Thielen did a little bit of everything yesterday.
Thielen the only receiver in the NFL now? I thought you dropped a stat yesterday. Only receiver in the NFL with 5 catches in every game?
Yeah, I said it like 2 minutes ago.
Okay.
Yeah, he has at least 5 catches in every game.
I apologize.
Through 7 games.
Yeah, he's...
Which when I started the offensive MVP conversation, that was the first part of the case made for Thielen along with his reliability. But Keenum is the one getting it to him, you know?
Right. And as long as Case Keenum is not turning the football over, we have a chance. And oh, by the way, our running game hasn't completely gone away without Dalvin Cook. I think that's the other key.
Not completely. $169 yesterday.
I know. That's what I mean. It's still there. It's still relevant. It's still between Jerick McKinnon now and Latavius Murray yesterday. We're getting some of the big plays from one of the two in the different in each game, right? It's been Jerick McKinnon for the last couple weeks. Yesterday was Latavius Murray. if this trend continues the rest of the year, that's good. Then we have a 1-2 punch at running back.
The offensive coordinator's on a roll.
Yeah.
And he's on a roll with, you know, running backs who are not Dalvin Cook, second quarterback, second left tackle, third left guard, no digs two games in a row. And they, you know, thinking about this thing last night, Peter, and again, you know more about game planning and scheming than I'll ever know. But McKinnon has three touchdowns over two games, and you're screening a lot to McKinnon, and you're stretching left and right a lot with McKinnon. Well, Dean Pease, your guy running the Ravens defense, you know, they're going to know that, so they're going to be ready for that. So then you go power running with Octavius.
It's harder to get outside on a 3-4 defense because you have those linebackers on the outside keeping the edges.
Got it.
We saw, I don't know if it was a power per se or a trap, but they pulled guards yesterday. And Latavius missed the first one because he'd have broken loose again. But we hadn't seen that all year.
Yeah.
So we had some counteraction going on.
The OC's on a roll.
And a
right
lot
now.
Of cutbacks. You know, a lot of cutbacks, and a lot of those cutbacks went to Terrell Suggs' side.
Yeah.
Start right, bend it back left.
Yep.
Adapting the game plan for your opponent and for the players that you have.
They game planned against Suggs.
They did.
They ran at Terrell Suggs.
They did. They did a very offensively in the run game, it was great to see some changes put in, and Latavius Murray adapted those changes. They worked for him, north and south. I mean, you watch the replay of his run; he was shot out of a cannon. I mean, just you haven't seen that yet,
right?
Out of him this year, so he's feeling better. And you have no other offensively. It's a very, very, it's a team effort over there. You're not finding one guy. You know, that's running that whole thing. So you lose Diggs and Floyd, so you lost some speed. So Thielen, I think, caught a lot more attention. We didn't have guys running wide open. They were manning our guys up across the field.
Yeah.
Then that's when I said during the game, you're going to have to reduce the formations, bunch them up, because that's what we saw in film and how they drop people and miss people. And then
that was an elite take.
We did the crossing routes and started moving
things
around.
How about the three tight ends right when they reduced it? And then Rudolph blocks inside
and
then quickly
breaks
leaks out.
Exactly right.
It was brilliant.
Those are the kinds of things that, that's good game plan and good coaching.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have the speed on the field to get guys just playing all wide open when you spread out the formation. So they bunched it up and ran guys cross routes, did a bunch of different things to get them open, and they did.
Maybe offensive MVP is the offensive coordinator.
Could be. It's very, very difficult to pick, I think, on either side of the ball, one guy.
Yeah.
One guy. And you look at how dangerous it is. You just got to look, you know, one state over to see how dangerous it is when your entire offensive identity is one guy, is one player. Mm-hmm. You lose that one player, and look what happens. The wheels come off. Now, we've been losing players left and right now for the last couple of years, so I think that's something that these players are kind of used to, and they harden themselves to it. They take pride in the fact that, we've had guys go down left and right, and we just next man up, next man, you know, that type of mentality. They've done it, and look where they are.
With Anthony Barr, he is physically gifted. I mean, you've chatted about a lot of his attributes over the years, and you know, for you and Lieber, a couple of former linebackers who know the position and things for which you're looking, I've sensed frustration from you guys with Barr in that he has A, B, C, D, and E, but we just can't get it out of him each and every game. It's coming out each and every game, and I absolutely believe in an ego-driven game where you want to set yourself up forever because of the gifts God has given you. And I said this into the season, and I was curious to see how it would transfer into his play. But Anthony sees Harry the Hitman, Everson Griffin, Xavier Rhodes, and Adam Thielen.
And Linval.
And Linval Hungry. Receive massive deals.
Right.
What about me? I mean, seriously,
right.
What about you? Go earn it. And he is.
He is. He's staying on the field. He, you know, was in the concussion protocol, quote unquote, at the end of the Green Bay game, but didn't miss a game. Mm-hmm. So he's been that way. We've kind of seen that from him for the last few seasons. He missed a game here and a game there. He'll be staying on the field.
Yeah.
When, I mean, you look at those blitzes and you look at Flacco and how demoralizing it is for a quarterback to just get to the top of your drop and then have to run or just duck because you're getting destroyed.
Right.
That is. That I mean,
it's a house of pain.
It was. It was exactly that. Then we're blitzing, and you have free runners to the quarterback. That's number one. Great call, great design, great execution.
Yeah.
And Barr has been the guy doing a lot of that, making big plays, making they're counting on him and putting him in spots to succeed and make big plays, and he's doing that, covering ground left and right. I mean, he's playing at a very, very high level, and we just want to keep – Lieber and I see him and get frustrated because we wish we could be as big and as fast as that young man is. You know, that's what I mean. That's the frustration, because you see all that talent, you're like, oh my god, he's so, just God blessed him with something and he's utilizing it right now. And yeah, that's great to see.
Pete Bursich's analysis is money. And speaking of money, the opportunity to put a grand in your hand begins today, 9 to noon. It will take place somewhere around 10, 11, 12, 13 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. It's an opportunity for you to win money. Tell us more, Mr. Nordo.
Yeah, during 9 to noon, I should say, during the 10 a.m. hour, we're going to play a keyword. And you're going to have the opportunity to text that. I believe it's to 200-200. So you text the keyword, and somebody's going to win $1,000. And have that opportunity each day to do so. And it's a six-week cash contest. So we're going to be running that daily here for the next 6 weeks here on 9 to noon.
Put a grand in your hand coming up shortly after 10 o'clock. Make sure you are there for that. Boom. When we return, more Vikings analysis from the analyst. It's 9 to noon.
You're listening to PA.
I'm an elephant. Elephant don't beef with ants. You know, elephant is so large, you don't even see ants.
On the Fan.
Programming on the Fan, brought to you in part by Cars for Kids. Check this out. Join PA in charge tomorrow for a special edition. It's a football feast at Buffalo Wild Wings in Maplewood. Again, PA in charge, a Friday feast on a Tuesday, Buffalo Wild Wings, Maplewood. More details, just go to KFAN.com, keyword events.
Kai Forbath with a 32-yard field goal try between the hash marks to the west side of U.S. Bank Stadium. Kai is 5 of 5. Snap spot. Right-footed Kai Forbath kick is up, and it is good. And Kai Forbath is 6 of 6 kicking field goals today.
Maybe the most underrated competitive arrogance storyline from the victory over the Ravens. I mean, you got Baltimore with this beefy Casey Hampton looking filled front seven.
No.
Terrell Suggs, football immortality, 10th overall pick in the 03 draft, 15th year from ASU. Almost looks like at times like he can't play a lick. How he had 4.5 sacks this year is beyond me, but that's okay. Terrence Newman, Geezers Unite, 15th year K-State.
Hey, he played well yesterday, too, by the way.
Fifth overall pick, 2003.
Yeah.
In 03, you were coaching with the Vikings.
I remember Terrence Newman. I remember the concerns with Terrence Newman were, his number one, his age a little bit. Number two, he had a shoulder problem that they were worried about it limiting his career.
Yeah.
And obviously, they were
nice,
right.
Nice analysis.
Well, they were.
It's great analysis by that defensive staff.
No, it's not. That's medical. I'm gonna point the finger right away and say.
And so was Adrian Peterson's collarbone in 07.
Yeah, I know.
How'd that work out for the six who skipped on him?
Yeah. Not very well.
So
how about the Cardinals skipping on him?
Kevin Williams went 9th in the 2003 draft. He retired after the 2015.
Yeah.
So there are some storylines. Keenum, Everson Sacks, Barr, Hitman, 3 picks, whole thing. What about Kai Forbath privately being pissed off by hearing on Twitter or reading the stories all week?
Is this true?
About no.
Oh.
But I'm just wondering.
Yeah.
About Justin Tucker being the cat's ass of the NFL.
Wow.
Justin Tucker, 179 for 179 on extra points, 67 for 67 since they moved the biatch back in 2015.
I know.
Career long of 61. He hit from 57 yesterday.
That thing, that was kicked off the Norseman's mustache.
You think it wasn't?
That's where the ball was placed. So it would have been good from the hair out the back of his helmet, for God's sake.
Maybe, Kai's long snapper, Kevin McDermott, snapped 7 games for Tucker and the Ravens in 2014.
Oh.
So he probably got a little, Kevin's saying all week, God, Justin's good. I mean, I was there when Justin did this. Maybe Kai was like, F Justin Tucker, watch me go 6 for 6.
As much as you want to laugh at that, there could be a lot of truth to it. You just don't know with kickers. Who has, you know, who knows? All I'm saying is maybe we need to start either getting a false start every PAT or whatever, just to move it back a little further.
What do you mean?
Because he can hit from 50, he can hit from 40, but
Ooh,
he can't.
Tucker?
No, our guy.
Our guy missed.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is why don't we just jump off sides, move it back another 5 yards or so, or take a 15-yarder, move it back, and then let him kick from there. We'll be better off.
They sat Mackenzie Alexander yesterday for the first game all season. When I caught wind of that 90 minutes before the game, it did catch me off guard a little bit.
Controversial, I think, was the phrase.
I thought it was
controversial. We were having fun with it.
Yeah,
I
thought it was controversial because he wasn't on the injury list all week.
Right.
And, you know, Mackenzie has had some professional L to him during the course of his career, but not necessarily this year. You know, but then it does make sense given you got no Diggs, you got no Floyd.
Right.
You need Rodney Adams in uniform in case one of those receivers goes down.
And Coley.
So and you got Stacy Coley in uniform too. So I think that absolutely played into Mackenzie Alexander being deactivated. But if I'm Mac, second year from Clemson, I mean, I want to be up. Sherrill's has to be up because of the punt returns. But I mean, Tremaine Brock, who hasn't been here as long as Alexander and who didn't play yesterday, they opted to put Brock in uniform and not Mackenzie.
Right.
And I think in sneaky fashion, that's a little telling.
And I don't think Brock got into the game at all.
He didn't.
He was standing on the sideline with a towel around his neck, and he didn't have his helmet in his hand.
Right.
So that, I think it's very telling that you would not, if you're Mackenzie Alexander, you're competitive. You're thinking to yourself, why him, not me?
Yeah.
So that's it's an interesting line to watch. And if that is the case, then good, because Mackenzie, we know, is very talented. He can get it done. He made a big play against Green Bay with a tip ball and that was intercepted, but he's also made some dumb penalties like we saw. It was in the preseason, but still dumb.
And no doubt.
Just got to grow up a little bit. And hopefully he will.
With the offense, I think it's clear Latavius Murray off that offseason surgery, just in baby steps fashion, kind of grinding along a little bit. He looked more fluid.
Yes.
And had some more cuts to him and plants.
Paul, he was north and south on that one run, the big run. You handed him the ball and he was boom, you shot out of a. You haven't seen that.
He had one of those little side steps that we just haven't seen.
No, we haven't seen that. We haven't seen any of that. So, absolutely, his foot's got to be feeling better. He's got to be feeling better. It's just a matter of confidence, knowing that you can plant that foot and cut.
Right.
It's where your mind is. You're not thinking about in between series. Foot's feeling okay. Is it? You know, I kind of tweaked it on this or that. When that's gone and you don't have to worry about that anymore, then you worry about what? The game plan, your body, your brain, your whole your plant. You're just playing the game, which I think we saw a glimpse of that yesterday.
Jarius Wright, 54 yards and a 30-yard catch. He has some Mr. Reliable to him. I mean, not the fastest thing in the world, always runs good routes, doesn't get a chance to play a ton. But without Diggs and without Floyd, here's Jerry, has 4 targets, 3 catches, 54, left his feet a couple of times for catches. I like when Jarius Wright succeeds. I'm a Jarius Wright fan.
I am too. And you think and you wonder if it's he gives you a little juice, and he's the only one out there that can. When you take a look, and Adam Thielen is getting a lot of attention. So you go to number two. That's where Diggs and Thielen have been so good, because if you concentrate on one, you still have the other one. Mm-hmm. With Diggs being out, and you need a little juice on the outside, some veteran. Jarius Wright's the guy. He doesn't make a ton of catches, but the ones that he's had when he's had to have been big. They've been down the field. They've been third down. They've been moving the chains. So Jarius Wright has earned his paycheck, so to speak. And you wonder why you keep a guy like that around. That's exactly why, because, you know, Laquon Treadwell's not quite yet that guy.
I have intel.
Ooh, goody.
Mackenzie Alexander was scratched due to injury. He emerged on the injury report Friday, listed as questionable with a hip injury, tweaked it in practice. He was one of the bits along with Floyd. I was watching Floyd with wide receivers coach Daryl Hazel and certified athletic trainer Eric Sugarman before the game, and missed Mackenzie Alexander warming up, but he did one of those warm-up bits, can't go.
Yeah.
So he absolutely was scratched due to injury, and I guess was on the report on Friday. This is 9 to noon. Terrence Newman at age 39, inside, outside, all over the place. How does he continue to strive at such a high level?
He's smart. He continues to study the game. You hit, I think your physical prime in this league is about 27. And then after you're 27, 28, 29, the physical skills start to erode a little bit. But you can make up for all that on the field just by being smart. And Terrence Newman is exactly that guy. If you watch him, Baltimore had one or two tight ends on the field at all times.
Yep.
Because they just didn't have any receivers. But when they started running the crossing routes and all the little different games that they run underneath, Terrence Newman, who was in those situations, knew exactly what was coming.
Yeah.
Jumped a lot of routes. If he was 2-3 inches taller, he would have had a pick six.
Yeah.
That ball would just thrown right over his head.
Mm-hmm.
He was just in the right spots at the right times, and he anticipated things. He saw things coming. He was pointing things out. So that is what keeps him on the field, because the guy just loves the game, and he learns the game, and he knows his opponents, and he goes out there and executes, and he helps all the guys around him. He's like a coach on the field, for God's sake. So that is how he gets to be. And you would think at the professional level all the players would be that way. They're not. There's only a handful of them that are like that, and you've heard about most of them. You know,
yeah.
Tom Brady, they say. Guys that will just watch, Brett Favre was that way.
A-Rod.
Well, I mean, and a lot of people don't know that. It's all he had was football. He couldn't go out to McDonald's and get a burger because he just would watch film all day long.
Honey.
All he did was talk football. Football. That's all he did.
In 09 on Friday nights, he was well known to be at the facility from like 9 until 11:30 in the evening, watching the last possible bit of blitz-related film that was coming at him to get, later in the season after the team began 6-0. But I mean, stuff like that,
right? Those guys make things look so easy. People just assume they roll out of bed and get up and put the helmet on and play. No, there's a lot more to it than that. But that's Terrence Newman, and that's why you love him, because he's a role, and he's a good player. He's a great player still, but he's a great role model for the younger players to let them know this is how you are supposed to be as you mature in this league. If you want to play a long time, this is what you need to do. And, hopefully some of that's rubbing off on him. It's rubbed off on Xavier, no question.
Peter L. to Booth at KFAN.com. Bradshaw and Brian inbox. Peter Langenfeld. Pete, I see the Vikes 5-2, and I want to say, yeah. But it's the Saints, the Bears, the Ravens. I'm going to put the Saints out of that because the Saints have become pretty good. It's the Bears and that Ravens squad we caught and Green Bay for 3.5 quarters without A-Rod. Peter writes, I keep waiting to evaluate the team until they play a really solid team. Then I look at the rest of the league and realize solid teams are scarce. How do you evaluate a team with such poor competition?
Well, we've made them look poor. Right, you win the games. A sign of a good team is you win the games that you're supposed to win or should win.
Yeah,
and it's timing. So much of it is timing. When do you play a specific team? The good teams, the great ones that are out there right now, I agree with you. There aren't. You have to find them with a searchlight a little bit. I mean, this division's a little bit shy of a dominant factor. We have to go back, and we have to go to Detroit and beat them on Thanksgiving Day.
Yep.
So
beating that squad has become problematic.
It'll occur. It'll happen. I mean, I look back at 09, and what a disaster kind of this team was going into the playoffs. And then we get that bye. Play Dallas, beat them, and you go right down to New Orleans, and you're right in it right to the end. That's all you need is that momentum right at the end of the season. So just put yourself in a position to get in the playoffs and you'll be fine. And you can't control your opponent. You can't control who's healthy, who's not. And you just keep on playing.
Very controversial question for you.
Yes.
What happens when Case Keenum, Sam Bradford, and Teddy Bridgewater are all good to go? Because it will happen. I mean, I guess you got to look at the record and what's happening with the offense and who's on lead vocals. But when Keenum, Bradford, and Bridgewater are all good to go, what happens?
I think a healthy Bradford is the best quarterback on this team right now. The question is, will he be healthy again?
Right.
That's the question. So minus that, you leave it with Case Keenum. You do need to give Teddy some time here. I know he's been working out. He's in great shape. But 400 days off. You get him all the look teams that he can get. You get him in there, mix him up, and then he's the number two guy. However, I think with what we're seeing with Shurmur, I don't think there's much that Case Keenum is doing that Teddy couldn't do as well, because they've tweaked the offense a little bit. And it's Bradford, I think Bradford has a better arm, more accurate arm. He's better down the field.
Yeah.
But he's not when he's not healthy. We saw it against Chicago. If he's not 100%, he's staring at the rush. He's doing a lot of – he needs to be 100%, and he needs to think and feel him. It's not us. It's not – he looks good. No. How do you feel? What do you think? And if he truly feels he's 100%, then he's the best quarterback we have.
Shurmur obviously has the answer to this, but like the bootleg rollout aspect of the offense – that has emerged sans Bradford, it's added an element to the whole thing that's really helping the team move the ball.
It is. It is. And when you have a Case Keenum, you can do that. But don't forget, if there's one thing I think that, not that we're taking it for granted, but the pass protection, Paul, has been fantastic. There were many times yesterday Keenum had all day really to sit in the pocket and throw the football or make a decision whether to run or throw it or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not under duress. We saw that. You watch Flacco, and then you watch Case Keenum, and it was two completely different animals. Flacco couldn't even, like you say, get to the top of his drop. 1, 2, 3, plant and throw. That's all he had. That's why our safeties and linebackers were jumping everything out to the flat.
Yep.
Because they knew he can't pump fake and throw deep. He doesn't have time. So they jump all the underneath stuff. It's the same thing that we saw last year when teams knew that we had to throw short and underneath. Mm-hmm. They were just jumping everything because they weren't worried about anything getting behind them. Now, it's a completely different story, but it starts with protection. Yeah, and the ability to get him out of the pocket and have him roll around has been it's an added element that they brought in that you wouldn't get out of Bradford for sure.
Nordo,
what up?
Wake up.
Soccer teams in England.
Yes,
Birmingham, Preston,
Sheffield,
QPR.
Queen's Park Rangers.
Yeah. Yep.
Sunderland.
Yeah.
Yep. Queen's Park Rangers. Yay.
Ipswich Town.
Correct.
Leeds United.
Yes.
Millwall.
Yes.
Derby County.
Correct.
Who the hell are these teams?
And
what I'm getting at is we go to London Wednesday. Aston Villa has a home game in Birmingham this weekend.
Yeah, championship.
Oh, wait a second. It's the same day we play the Browns. Father.
Oof. Ah.
But, I mean, in 2013, my highlight of our trip to London was the Vikings beating the Steelers. But the day before that,
taking
that hour and 20-minute train ride to Birmingham, meeting Brad Guzan, your friend from Chicago, goalkeeper for Aston Villa, watching them upset Manchester City in a very exciting game.
How about back when they were in the Premier League.
How about those City fans on the train on the way back?
I still got video on it. Wait a second. So what is all this Ipswich?
Some of them are not Premier League, though.
No, some of them, I don't think any of those are at this point.
Sunderland,
Queen's Park, I believe, was relegated.
Wow.
Queen's Park relegated at one point.
Brentford, Middlesbrough.
Middlesbrough is in the mix, they're a Premier League team.
Damn. I mean, you have Arsenal, you've got Tottenham Hotspur, you have a lot of teams.
No, Middlesbrough was sent down, too, because that was Guzan's daily double. Went down with Aston. Moved to Middlesbrough in their Premier League opportunity, and they moved down.
So Guzan no longer is the goaltender for Aston Villa.
He is the keeper in Atlanta now. Atlanta United, the expansion MLS team that are making their the playoff debut on Thursday.
Yeah, the cat's ass of the MLS from what I hear.
They're going to get 50,000 people a game.
Right.
There you go.
Well, this is going to be so antithetical to soccer snobbery. Arsenal plays at home on Saturday.
Oh, my God.
I couldn't care less.
Why?
Because I don't know the goalie. He's not going to walk us to his car like Guzan did, where we had to wait a half hour with all the rubes getting autographs and pictures.
Dude, that's a vibe that you'll love.
Hold on, though. I don't care
about the vibe. I care about the goalie.
Okay. Does it have to be a player, or could it be a front office guy?
Maybe.
All right. Now.
Depends on if they're a sweet opportunity.
Because now we're talking.
Really? We have Arsenal steam?
I didn't know Arsenal was playing Saturday.
I'm going to mind the gap.
Let's take care of it. I went to the Derby Day there when they played Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
And it was amazing.
Uh-oh.
They were down 2-0 first half, second half. They scored five unanswered.
Wow.
It was nuts.
All right, look into it.
It was Brian Harper. Brian Harper and I were there. It was fantastic.
Wednesday, be there for the boom. The boom of the jet leaving to London. 9 to noon Thursday and Friday will take place from the team hotel. And we have Buffalo Wild Wings, Maplewood tomorrow. Thank you, Pete. See you Wednesday.
See ya.
Pete Bursich, analyst, Vikings Radio Network, Guardsian Studio. On the Golden Gophers production around the corner. But first, an opportunity to put a grand in your hand.
Your shot at $1,000 now. Text the keyword LOCK to 200-200. You'll get a text confirming entry plus iHeartRadio info. Standard data and message rates apply. That's LOCK to 200-200.
You're listening to PA.
I will punch you, pal.
On the Fan.
This portion of 9 to Noon brought to you by Goldie's Locker Room Store.
Out of the pistol, wide side to the right. Croft to throw. Looks, has plenty of time. Rifles underneath. Caught by Tyler Johnson. Dives forward. Touchdown! Minnesota Golden Gophers. Tyler Johnson's seventh touchdown snag of the year. His fourth in the last quarter and 3 minutes.
J.G.
Gopher Nation.
That's the golden time of day.
Courtesy of Goldie's Locker Room, Justin Gard, sideline analyst, Golden Gophers Radio Network, joins us in studio weekly off a W against the Fighting Illini. In relatively close fashion at TCF Bank Stadium over the weekend. Now the battle for the Big Fat Pig takes place this weekend at Kinnick. It's the Gophers and Iowa, and JG joins us in studio now. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm here at Meat Sauce's computer, and the only thing he has up, first of all, his Twitter account is live and active right now. I could tweet anything
no,
I wanted
not.
To, yes, from at MeatSauce1.
Go ahead and slide into those DMs
I
and
thought
see
about
what's
it.
Up there.
I do want to see a little bit there, but there's also the 100 best bars and pubs in London is what he's pulled up here. So clearly a business trip for our guy Sauce Man.
Well, the power trip will take place from London Thursday and Friday. His show there is 11:30 till 3 in the afternoon. I have the bumper-to-bumper slot from the team hotel in London 3 to 6 Thursday and Friday.
Mm-hmm.
But Saturday, they're doing a big super special pub crawl.
I heard about that, yeah.
So, I mean, there are so many Vikings fans that are coming over for the game that they've organized a big pub crawl on Saturday. Can you imagine how smashed some of those human beings are going to be in London?
It's going to be
on Saturday.
Yeah, well, given the fact that we've got another night game this Saturday at Kinnick Stadium. We've had, I think, two other night games this year, three other night games, maybe, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine how smashed there'd be because I get to talk with drunk people basically every other week when there's a night college football game. So
right.
I can't imagine it. It'll be fun.
With the Iowa game, it's a night game?
5:30. Yes, 5:30 on Fox.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a 7 p.m. start like that Penn State thing earlier.
No.
But it still will go into the evening.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Kinnick with night games.
It gets real.
That's college football immortality
It gets real.
Penn State rolled in there with the Heisman guy.
Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, big favorite. And then, the Kinnick bit at night.
They wake up early.
Yeah, Penn State had to win it on, the last play of the game.
Last second. So, yeah, they wake up early. And a lot of college campuses around the country, they wake up early. There will be a lot of drinking, I'm sure, today or Saturday this week. So, and the crowd is really close to you. We had a night game the last time we went down there.
Yeah.
Really close to you, really drunk. Things get real pretty quickly.
How do you handicap or analyze the past performance from Saturday, the victory over Illinois?
Defensively, I'd say it was a good performance. You did what you needed to do against a bad offense, an offense that's trying to figure out who they want to play at quarterback. They started with your guy, Jeff George Jr.,
yep.
Then brought in a freshman, burned his red shirt, then just alternated them play after play after play. They were running different guys in and out. So defensively, you gave up scoring plays. Basically, I don't count the last drive as much, given you were up 14. It was kind of desperation. You're playing prevent, all of that. The only other two scoring drives you had were basically off of turnovers and basically like 50 yards total. So defensively, I thought it was fine. I thought it was a good bounce back from what they'd done the last couple of weeks. Offensively, up and down again. A great first drive. I think we might have just played that highlight, the Tyler Johnson touchdown pass. Great first drive. Kroft looks good, looked good in the pocket. They ran the ball well. Kobe McCrary was good. Then they just went away for a while. You know, turnovers, fumbles for Rodney Smith in their own red zone. That's negative.
Yep.
Demery looked uncomfortable. PJ talked about having the happy feet. I've been talking all week about it's different when you're the guy and it's your team and it's your week.
Ain't no doubt.
You're going to play. You know, they're ready for you just like you're ready for them. He went in the Michigan State game, had nothing to lose. He could do whatever he want, played loose, played free. We saw that. Yep. He was definitely wound up. He was definitely sped up. I like the fact that they've made no bones that he's going to be the guy going into Iowa. You might as well see what you have at this point. You might as well let him learn from that and hope that he continues to get better, because it wasn't a great performance by him. He was indecisive at times. So that's kind of the way it was. Luckily, Kobe McCrary had a big day on the ground, and they got just enough.
What do you know about quarterback Seth Green?
What do you want to know?
Well, just he never emerges as a possibility to play.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I think, you know, this goes back to high school as well. I mean, part of the reason he is not at Oregon anymore, or never was at Oregon, is I don't think they wanted him to play quarterback. There should be this segment brought to you by Goldie's Locker Room.
Yep.
And then if Kerry Limo wants to sponsor one more thing, it should be the Seth Green question of the week. Because I get it on every show, whether I'm doing it on Fargo, whether it's yesterday, whether it's on Twitter.
Yeah.
And it's a good question, and it happens really with every in-state kid. That's
It's because they're stuck at the spot's the only reason that I bring it up.
For sure, and it's because he's a local kid, right? Because you've heard about him for 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. So you get in that.
Did he go to Texas, though?
Well, he's here, then he went to Texas, then he's here now. But we had, bottom line is we'd read about him for years, right? We knew who he was. We had heard about him on the east side there. I just don't think he's a quarterback, in all honesty. I mean, when he gets off, I remember the first time he walked by me, I looked at him, I said, geez. Like, he's one of those guys where you get off the bus, he looks like he should be playing Division I football. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's tall, strong, he's sturdy, he's all of those things. But I don't know if he's, I don't think he's the thrower. I haven't seen him play. You know, I never really watched him play in high school, but I'd heard from enough people that if you thought he was going to come in here and be a throwing type guy, probably wasn't going to be like that. He's a terrific athlete. He was a good runner. I know the coaches like him. I know his teammates like him a lot. I know he's a great team guy.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's a Division I Big Ten quarterback. Now, some people might say, what's the distinction from what you've thrown out the last 5 years, right?
Yeah.
But it was that's basically it. I mean, it's not like he's doing anything wrong. It's not like he's doing bad things behind the scenes. He just kind of is who he is at this point, from my information.
Gardzi, what do you notice about PJ Fleck? You know, after losses and like after last Saturday, where this program is now, but his intent to bring it somewhere within a year or two, where I mean, that absolutely the future matters more than the now I can't say it matters more to PJ because he wants to win every game now.
Yeah.
But I mean, the future is kind of everything. When you hire somebody like that, you cast your gaze the way of 2018, probably 2019, to make this a really good program.
Well, that's the hope whenever you hire a new coach. Year one is going to be weird no matter where you are. You're doing things that are different, whether it's offense, defense, or you're having Easter egg hunts, you know, during Easter, and you're giving away scholarships in weird ways, right? Everything is different.
Yeah.
In terms of how he is, he's definitely very forward-thinking. I'm sure you've figured that out in talking with him every week. He's very much, we get to hear, this is what happened, now what do we do about it? One way or the other. Now, I'm going down there to talk to him right after this. I'm sure that's what we'll say on the Facebook show at noon is we had the win. That was great. We got to celebrate. Now that's over.
Yep.
What we did Saturday, we can't worry about. So he's pretty consistent that way. You know, he told me after the most recent loss against Michigan State right after the game, he's like, if we could practice right now, I'd go to practice. Like, I'm ready to go. I liked what we did in the fourth quarter. I liked what I saw at Demery. I'm ready to get to practice right now and try to continue to build this thing. So, obviously we're going to be judging the PJ Fleck era by years probably 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
But certainly they want to try to win here a couple of times these last final games and hopefully get into a bowl game, which is going to be tough.
The Celestine pick six, then acknowledging his father.
Mm-hmm.
That was the most touching moment of the whole season, in my opinion.
For sure. I don't even know what to say about it because, you know, it happened during the summer and he's talked a little bit about it. But he's been pretty tough about it. You know what I mean? Not in a bad way, just like, hey, I love my dad. This is what my dad was about. He taught me everything. Here I am. He was hoping to come to some games. His mom has been to, I think, most of the games. There's been some pretty good shots of her as well.
Yeah, amazing.
And to be able to talk to him on the field right after that, right after the game, basically, and just to ask him about it, what did it mean to be able to do that? His first touchdown, putting the dagger in, so to speak, allowing them the victory. It was tremendous. There was a great scene in the locker room as well as they were giving out some game balls and things. And so PJ gave him a ball. His teammates hugged him. There were a lot more tears at that point than there were on the field. So really special moment, touching moment for sure.
When the Cyclones are top 25 and the Hawkeyes aren't.
How about that?
What is Iowa like?
Here's one thing. I can't believe Sage Rosenfels isn't here right now because it doesn't take much for the Cyclone fans to remind Hawkeye, because it's the Hawkeye State, right?
Yeah.
That's what everybody calls it. If you did like a little heat map of who cheers for whom, it's like all black and gold. Then right by Des Moines and Ames, there's a little bit of red. Then you go a little bit further west, and it's Nebraska, like in the Sioux City area.
Yeah.
So the second, and God, what a great year they're having. I think they host TCU this weekend, top five team.
Wow.
It's
Win at Texas. I mean, the Oklahoma win was unbelievable.
Yes.
Then they win at Texas Tech.
Right.
I watched some of that. It was an 11 a.m. game.
Mm-hmm.
They got their third quarterback, and they're making plays.
Yeah, and they've got a linebacker that's like that does everything as well. So that coach comes highly regarded from the MAC. He's a young kid as well, if I remember correctly. But, yeah, it's not – for my Hawkeye relatives, I can tell you this. It ain't pleasant. Now – they did win the rivalry game this year in like triple overtime or something. It was a crazy game, second week of the season. So the Hawkeye fans still have that in their back pocket. But when the Cyclones are top 25 and you just lost to Northwestern again in the Ferentz era in overtime on the road, it's not great. But I'd be shocked if you don't have a Sage Rose. Is he coming in studio this week?
Yet.
Or you're going to London. That's bad.
London
bad,
Wednesday.
Bad break for the Jug.
Speaking of London, in closing, Greenway goes with us. He's part of the sponsor bit. Saturday, 11:30 p.m. London time. It's the battle for the fat pig. Chad and I got to find a spot.
Are you ready to go?
At least, we got a game the next day and everything.
Well, Sauce just pulled up the 100 best bars and pubs in London. Do you want me to see if there's one that has Fox?
That'd be a cinch, man.
Yeah, it should be fun. I think the Iowa opened up as an 8-point favorite last night, I saw, which doesn't surprise me a whole lot.
Yeah.
They've been kind of meandering. They've been kind of up and down. They had the Penn State loss that you talked about.
Yeah.
They're one of those teams that I think can beat anybody that they play, but they can also just not play well, and we've seen that a couple of times. Michigan State game didn't play great. Northwestern game didn't think they played great, had opportunities. We got to watch a lot of that game in the press box to kind of get ready. So, it'll be interesting. Kinnick's always a tough place to play. I'm anticipating it's going to be tough out there for Demery, who's never really been in that environment. So they got a tough task this week for sure.
My man, most likely we'll see you next Monday. Travel safely. Enjoy the game, and thanks for the time.
Have fun in London.
JG Weekly, courtesy of Goldie's Locker Room. Second half of the presentation begins now.
Time now for the Vikings Report on the Fan, presented by Quick Trip, the preferred convenience store of the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur joins PA after this from Quick Trip.
Well, the Vikings move to 5-2 on the season, which means you're getting paid off at Papa John's today with the code VIKES50, VIKES50 at papajohns.com. We'll get you half off your entire order. So thank you to the Vikings for doing what we want them to do, and thank you, Papa John's.
Speaking of the Minnesota Vikings, about 12 minutes from now on the 9 to noon show, we are going to draw a high-end comparison from the 2017 Minnesota Vikings to a certain team that won a certain Super Bowl.
Oof.
That's 10:57-ish, 10:58-ish, next segment. Some phone calls after that. And then the head cheese, David Senekin, for the weekly border battle about 5-0 minutes from now. Paul Allen, KFAM, Brian Heating and Cooling Studios, radio station FM 100.3, The Fan. Coming up next with the producer, Amico Thibodeau. We call it News du Nord.
News du Nord.
Brought to you by Canterbury's Card Casino. poker, blackjack, all good, all year round. Live racing starts up again in the spring. Go to CanterburyPark.com for all the details.
Number one.
Earlier today, I took my own L on a certain game that took place last evening in Oklahoma, and I played Fox Sports Oklahoma's highlight. Let me play the right one, courtesy of Dave Benz, Jim Peterson, and Fox Sports North.
Wiggins drives across midcourt. Andrew lets it fly at the buzzer for the loop. Andrew Wiggins banks it in. And the Timberwolves, an unbelievable win here in Oklahoma City. Wow. Wow.
Wow, 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 indeed. Karl Anthony Towns, big bucket for the go-ahead. Oklahoma City, waning seconds, no timeouts for Minnesota. They hit the go-ahead basket, and then Andrew Wiggins does that, again, courtesy Fox Sports North Television. How good was that game last night? How fun was it to steal a victory from the jaws of defeat down in OKC?
I forgot to text Jim Peterson after the game to see if he gave the game a standing ovation. I mean, during the Wolves' doldrums of not going to the postseason in the last decade and change, there was a game within the last few years at Oklahoma City that might have gone one, two, or three overtimes and was a fantastic, drama-filled basketball game. It was when Durant played for OKC for sure. And the altruistic, elite basketball mind Jim Peterson, despite the Wolves losing,
right
at the end of the game, was standing up, giving the game a standing ovation. He's the best. I mean, that was standing ovation worthy last night for big man Jim Pete. Wiggins with the straight-ahead bank dagger after Carmelo, in cold-blooded fashion, drills a three. We got no timeouts. Karl Anthony Towns' pick was heard around the world. It was one of the most underrated pick set in the last 15 years of Wolves basketball. Wiggins wins. Thibodeau attempts to jump, but pumps his fist. It was the cutest ever. We've won two in a row. And we get Darren Collison and the Indiana Pacers at home tomorrow night. Feels like three in a row.
It certainly does.
Number two.
To the Minnesota Wild in Calgary on Saturday.
He's turned it over here with neutral light. Picked up by Linick. Drops it off for Zucker. Zucker's shot blocked. Boyfus as well. Now a chance. Spurgeon in with a shot. He scores! Spurgeon with a slap shot. Rim of the right circle. Snuck it by Smith on the short side. Back-to-back goals by Wild defenseman Suter to tie it. And Spurgeon to put him ahead.
Yeah, you heard it from Bob and Tom. We are your home for Minnesota Wild hockey. 4-2 the final, down 2-1 in the third period, PA. Suter hops out of the box and is a man possessed. Gets the unassisted goal, and then Spurgeon follows it up. Winnick with the ice at 4-2.
Yeah.
And the Wild secure their second win of the season, which was much needed considering the injury-related issues they've been having and the tough times in the third period for them to go and close one out.
Same. For yours truly, it was a late Saturday night game. Had an early start Sunday for the Life Changer, Vikings and Ravens. And World Series Game 7 was taking part. I watched the first period. When I saw my guy Alex Stalock steal the show with 18 saves, including three beauties.
He was very good.
That was it for me.
Yeah.
I figured I'd get the result via Twitter the next morning. Big boy did his job. Now you guys got to get us back periods 2 and 3. Happy the Wild won. 6-game homestand begins tomorrow, I believe, with the Coup. And 9 to noon has a Vox in the Box at XL Energy Center a week from tomorrow on Halloween.
Number three.
Let's wrap up with a couple of NFL-related nuggets. A Super Bowl rematch last night, PA, at Gillette. Atlanta heading up there to face the New England Patriots. And yuck is really the final word needed. 23-7 the final. Falcons 2-9 on third down, only muster 7 points. The team loses at home to the Bills a few weeks ago. What's wrong with the Falcons, and just how awful was that game last night? I didn't enjoy it at all.
I am not into the intrinsic feeling that they still are battling what happened to them in the Super Bowl, because I have heard that actually from some national NFL-related people to whom I listen to on the radio. Okay, I mean, I respect the opinions. For me, it absolutely, unequivocally is the fact that Kyle Shanahan is no longer their offensive coordinator. Steve Sarkisian's their new offensive coordinator. They came out of the gate okay. They looked decent in that Bears game. Had some explosiveness to them. But something now, when you get into the third, fourth, and fifth games of film, something is being taken away that is frustrating Matt Ryan, and new OC guy can't get around it. So it's up to them to get around it. The identity of that team is offense. And, you know, with Freeman and Coleman and Julio Jones, super special Mohamed Sanu, the tight ends and everything, and Matt Ryan. So something's wrong offensively, and they're second-guessing things, and they're taking L's.
And finally, tonight, in our primetime pick segment that we do on Thursdays, you chose the Washington Redskins to be victorious tonight in Philadelphia. I think they're 4.5-point dogs, and you went daily double on it with the fact that not only will they cover, but they will outright win. What are you looking forward to? Redskins, Eagles in Philly this evening. That'll entice you on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, we did primetime picks Thursday for a Monday night game. Redskins practiced Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and after 3 days of practice, proceeded to scratch both their starting corners.
Whoa!
Rashad Breeland and Josh Norman both out this evening. So since a bet is a bet is a bet, I will stick with the Daily Double and the old Washington team. They can cover that. They can cover that spot tonight. But when I doubled up on it, man, I thought I had Breeland and Norman, and I don't.
I thought they were back, too.
So we'll see what happens, man. Couldn't care less. Excited to watch the game, though. Go Redskins, by the way. Because if Merrill Reese's Eagles lose, Minnesota Vikings, three-way tie.
I love it.
Best record, National Football Conference. Beep. Neat.
Let's go.
Speaking of the Minnesota Vikings, let's draw a high-end comparison from the 2017 Vikings to a Super Bowl-winning team that housed the crown more than a decade and a half ago. That's next. Don't leave. From the KFAM Brian Heating and Colleen Studios, your buddy Paul Allen, 9 to noon.
Lifelong listener of your show, and I'm also a Vikings fan and an alcoholic. I'd like to shed some light on this.
On the Fan.
What?
You gotta be bleeping me.
Say what?
Hey, get out of there.
Are we sure we want to do this?
Super Bowl homeboy.
Say what?
I love how intense you guys are about your Vikings.
5-2, first place in the NFC North.
Hell no, we're gonna go to playoffs, Mitchie. I'll tell you that right now.
Some extra point problems.
The extra point, is it? It's no good again!
Get the hell out of here!
Doug Bryan missed it to the left again, and the Vikings only lead by two.
Come on!
After the Lions, Al.
It's a long year. Everybody just relax. It's going to be all right.
From a positive standpoint, having won three in a row.
Okay, calm down.
So let's do it.
Super Bowl homeboy.
Are you sure you want to do this?
I'm not sure at all, but I did it. And so we can't go back from it now.
What are we doing?
Well, the Minnesota Vikings are on a mission.
Right. At 5-2.
Atop the NFC North.
The same record. This team you're about to draw a comparison was Sunday, October 15th, after losing to the Washington team.
That is correct. Hopefully we don't take the two additional L's they did afterwards.
We ain't losing to Cleveland.
But we'll get over that. Defense is elite. Run game is rolling along. The offensive MVP thus far, which is no question Case Keenum, is not losing games for the squad. This is about faith. So as we go...
Mission Minneapolis.
Hashtag Faith Radio.
Let's look at another team with a great defense and a somewhat competent offense that just got through games.
Yeah.
On their way to Super Bowl victory.
Primary quarterback.
We are comparing the 2017 Minnesota Vikings to the 2000 Baltimore Ravens.
Super Bowl homeboy.
You know, that team led by two quarterbacks who each started eight games. We've used two quarterbacks this year.
Hmm.
The quarterback who hoisted the crown for said Ravens had a passer rating of 76.5.
He did.
The guy who replaced had a passer rating of 69.5. Our guy yesterday, in a victory over said Ravens, had a passer rating of 67.5.
He wasn't very good.
Okay, so, I mean, are you sure you want to do this?
Hashtag Faith Radio.
I mean, after the Lions game, I was starting to concoct ways to sell hope and prepare Hashtag Faith Radio.
How could this team be 500 until Teddy gets back?
For Combine 2018.
Right.
After, and I did it again yesterday. After the victory over the Ravens, three consecutive Kings of the North, I'm texting Chief Operating Officer Kevin Warren to make sure I don't lose my booth for Super Bowl 52.
Correct.
I'm confident that we'll be world champions. That's what I've said right from the start, and I'm still confident of that.
So let's look at this. The 2000 Ravens, they won Super Bowl 35 in a beatdown of the Kerry Collins-led New York Giants. If you remember, that was 41 donut year on the Vikings in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
Quarterback of the 2000 Ravens, his name was Trent Dilfer. Trent Dilfer has a Super Bowl ring. Ooh. Career 55% pass completion.
Boy, they had a nice 1-2 punch at running back. Holy cow.
It wasn't bad, was it? Damn. 113 TDs, 129 picks. Had one of his best completion years in 2000 with 59.3%. Mm-hmm. 12 TDs to 11 picks. 76.6 rating, as you mentioned. His career average was 70. He was in replace of Tony Banks. Benched in favor of Dilfer halfway through. Had only played in two career playoff games until 2000. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, his career started in Tampa, where he was replaced by a young rookie, Sean King, halfway through 1999. Let's get to our guy.
Third and three, pass right, caught Diggs at the 40. Space for the 30, and it's loose! 10-5, touchdown! 59-yard touchdown, Keenan to Stephon Diggs. 27-3, Minnesota.
Case Keenum threw three touchdowns that day, by the way. Offensive MVP.
Oh, my God. Some of these defensive names from the 2000 Ravens.
We're going to get to them. Case, a career 59% completer. 29 TDs, 22 picks. So he's above 500 there. That's good. Career rating is 80. Best completion percentage of his career so far this year at 64. 5-2 scores to pick ratio. Career high rating at 89. And he's 3-2. Thus far. Replaced Sam Bradford, not due to benching, but due to injury. Never has been to the playoffs. He was replaced last year in favor of rookie Jared Goff in Los Angeles, and he is now here. So, the quarterbacks feel fairly similar to me. The running game.
Yeah.
The Ravens had Jamal Lewis, more than 1,300 yards. Priest Holmes, second fiddle with more than 500.
Yeah.
They averaged 137 yards a game, had nine rushing TDs in 2000. That's for the Ravens.
Yeah.
The Vikings, three-headed beast, now just two with Dalvin Cook being lost for the season, but we got our guys.
Keenum takes the snap, gives it to Murray, runs into Brandon Williams, gets away from him, sprints up the middle, 30, 35, 40. Stiff arms, Tony Jefferson at the 50, weaves his way to the right to the Ravens 40, and by far Latavius Murray's most explosive moment wearing the purple and gold runs the Vikings to a first down. That's a gallop of 35, Latavius Murray.
Jerick McKinnon and Latavius Murray picking up the slack. We saw what McKinnon was able to do at Chicago and last week in the border battle. 872 yards so far, 124 a game with six rushing touchdowns. The running game, very, very reminiscent of the 2000 Ravens, PA. Your thoughts?
My sphincter automatically clenches when you say it.
Let's get to the receivers here. Ravens only averaged 193 a game through the air, 20 passing TDs total. The leading receiver, well, he was tight end Shannon Sharp with 810 yards and five scores.
And we got big boy.
You remember the name Quadri Ismail?
Yes.
He
Quadri.
Was, Kadri. He was their leading pass catcher on the outside. Mm-hmm. 655 yards and 5 TDs as well.
Yeah, we got better receivers.
For the Vikings.
Travis Taylor, though.
This is better.
Case goes deep left side for Adam Thielen. Caught at the 20-yard line. Case Keenum to Adam Thielen on second-year corner Vernon Hargraves. It's a gain of 45, and the Vikings are in the red zone first down.
High fives for everybody.
The 2000 Ravens wouldn't have finished second in the AFC Central if they had Thielen,
yep,
and Diggs and Rudolph.
Yep.
Actually, well, I would take Shannon Sharp probably over Rudolph.
Ain't
if
no
we're
doubt.
Gonna go stats over there. At any rate, that's where. So they had.
Shannon Sharp went for 8, 10, and 5.
Yeah.
I mean, big boy can do that.
Big boy can do that. I'm just, you know. Hall of Fame equity with Shannon, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
At any rate, Rudolph with a couple of scores, but second in targets to Adam Thielen. Diggs
Shannon's
leads
a
the
Hall
way.
Of Famer.
I believe he is.
Yep, HOF, 8-time Pro Bowler, 4-time All-Pro.
Yeah, he was all right.
Well, he only won 3 Super Bowls. Holy cow, Shannon Sharp, HOF.
Did he go 3 in a row, 2 with the Broncos and then the 2000 Ravens?
Bet.
Oh, my God. Diggs leads the way with 4 TDs. Better receivers, similar effectiveness in the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
The defense, historic for
Here
the 2000
go.
Ravens, only 10.3 points per game.
How about us?
The Vikings averaged 17 points allowed per game.
What about me?
If we wouldn't allow that last second, you know, the 2000 Ravens do not give up final second touchdowns.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, as I look through it, 1, 2, 3, 4. They shut out their opponent 4 times.
Ravens did?
In the 2000 season.
Oh, my God.
Opening day, 16-0 over the Steelers, 37-0 over the Bengals.
Ooh.
Oh, their first 3 division games, they shut them out. That's how good this 2000 Ravens defense is. Can't say that for the Vikings
what
in
do you
terms
mean?
Of shutouts. The 2000 Ravens had 23 picks. The Vikings have 7 so far.
The freaking Ravens in 2000 had their bye after week 13.
How weird is that?
What the hell is that all about?
Sounds fixed. They had a stud, somewhat veteran corner in Dwayne Starks. The vet had 6 picks.
And I think Chris McAllister.
But we had our guy.
Allison motions to the right, back to the left. 3 receivers right, 2 left. Empty backfield. Hundley facing a 4-man rush. Passes left. This season, and the Vikings have turned over the green and gold.
Would you rather have Xavier Rhodes or Dwayne Starks?
Ooh, Xavier Rhodes.
Would you rather have Chris McAllister or this guy?
Huntley out of the shotgun. There's B-Rob hitting him. He throws it, and it's intercepted by Trey Waynes at the 6-yard line. Trey Waynes intercepts Brett Huntley, and the Minnesota Vikings will head into next week against the Baltimore Ravens as a first-place team in the NFC North.
That's tough. He had 4 picks during that 2000 season. Chris McAllister at 23 years old.
Yeah.
And the nice career that he had, very, very good corner.
I'd take McAllister over Trey Waynes, but Trey's getting better stride by stride. Then you get to the safeties. One of their safeties was Kim Herring, I think.
Yeah, a little bit like Sendejo, right?
Yeah, I'd rather have Sendejo than Kim Herring. Who was their other safety?
Rod Woodson versus this guy.
Come on! H.O.F.
The pack dive behind Huntley who goes play action. Danielle Hunter's on him, but he gets it off. And it's intercepted! A one-handed interception by Harrison Smith. Turns it up 45-40. The Hitman with his 3rd pick of the season. And the Vikings have turned over Green Bay.
What was Rod Woodson's nickname?
Hot Rod?
Hot Rod versus Hitman. I have no idea what Rod Woodson's nickname was.
Well, his nickname's HOF. I mean, Rod Woodson was the bomb. I mean...
No, he's incredible.
Yeah, God bless Harry, and hopefully Harry is Harry the HOF one day. I mean, Rod Woodson, though. That's advantage Rod Woodson.
Now, they had Sam Adams, Tony Siragusa, as the fat guys in the middle.
I would take Linval Hungry over both of them.
What about Tom Johnson? Probably those two over Tom Johnson.
Yeah, they played a 3-4, though.
That's what makes it a little difficult in the comparison. I agree. They had Rob Burnett, Michael McCrary.
Yeah.
Coming off the edge, Burnett led the team with 10.5 sacks, 35 overall.
They might have had Peter Boulware, too.
We'll get to him, but we have this guy.
First and 10, Ravens from their own 45. Flacco back to pass. He's going to roll out to the right. It's a strip sack, and it's picked up by a member of the Ravens. It's Everson Griffin with his second sack today. Griffin with a strip sack. Unofficially, 9 sacks on the season.
And Danielle Hunter with 3.
Minnesota number one in the NFL on third down defense at 25%. Flacco shotgun, 2 receivers left. He's back to pass. He's hit, and he's sacked by Danielle Hunter at the 17-yard line. That's Danielle Hunter's 3rd sack this season, and the Ravens are punting.
It's a different game now, I know that. But would you take McCrary and Burnett versus Everson and Daniil on either end of your defensive line?
Everson and Daniil all day in America.
Yeah, I don't think it's close. Now at the linebackers.
God, look at these scores this Ravens defense put on teams in 2000.
Yeah, they had 42 fumble recoveries that year or something like that.
Honey, they won their final 7 games of the season and had to play in the freaking wild card round as a 12-4 operation. How good was the AFC in 2000? 12-4, and you're playing week one just for fun, and then you smoke Denver. Holy cow.
Now, they had Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis was their triple-digit tackle guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had 3 sacks that year in 2000. And we have Eric Kendricks, who will have 100-plus. I can't. Ray Lewis, okay, we know Ray Lewis is future HOF, despite all the bravado and the weird obstruction of justice bit. I think that was prior to the 2000 season, by the way. So, Ray Lewis making plays through legal potential distractions. We have Kendricks, we love him, he has a sack this year already. But my question to you, you remember Peter Boulware, 6'4", 255.
Oh, yeah.
An athlete, edge rusher,
State.
7 sacks, 4-time Pro Bowler.
Badass.
But what about this guy?
Buck Allen to the left of Joe Flacco out of the shotgun.
Allen.
Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks cheat to the line of scrimmage, and they both come. Flacco flustered and sacked by Anthony Barr back at the 12-yard line. A blitzing Anthony Barr buries Joe Flacco, and Sam Cook is in the punt.
Peter Boulware or Anthony Barr, PA, your thoughts?
I don't remember enough about Boulware. I can't. I'm not necessarily into going player for player in this situation.
No, I get it.
The 2000 Ravens is considered one of the 3 best defenses in the history of the NFL. It's more of a season feel for me, you know, where the Ravens at one point were 5-2, the Vikings are 5-2. The Ravens went through some distractions and some situations that they had to get around. Likewise for the Vikings, losing Sam Bradford and Dalvin Cook. And the Ravens' defense in 2000 absolutely was the best in the NFL. And I think the Vikings' defense is the best in the NFL this year. But I don't know if I can say absolutely. Mm. Because I still have a lot of respect for the way Seattle does things. I think New England's defense is going to rally off a substandard start through the first 5 games. But, I mean, when you have a defensive end with 9 sacks and a safety with 3 interceptions, and your 2 of your primary corners have interceptions, and you're getting TFLs from your linebackers in mass every single game, and then you get Linval occupying 2 guys every single down, that this has the potential to become, if it's not already ready there, an elite defense. The Vikings led by Case Keenum, that's a Trent Dilfer-like quarterback. Jamal Lewis and Priest Holmes, Jerick McKinnon and Latavius Murray, advantage Baltimore Ravens. Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, Kyle Rudolph, Kadri Ishmael, Travis Taylor, those guys with Shannon Sharp. I mean, some similarities can be drawn here,
yeah,
between the 2000 Ravens,
so you mentioned,
and the 2017 Minnesota Vikings.
So you mentioned it, though, going back to 2000, the AFC appeared to be such a significantly stronger conference than the NFC. Baltimore in the AFC, they win the Super Bowl. This year, a bit of a different or flip-flopping vibe from the standpoint that the NFC, you're struggling to see teams differentiate themselves. And if the Eagles win tonight, then they're that team. Then they're the most complete team in the conference. But the AFC is, it seems like it has three or four contenders where the NFC is still trying to figure itself out. The Vikings happen to be at 5-2, one of those teams trying to figure themselves out moving forward.
Well, I don't. There has not proven to be greatness through six or seven games of the NFL, period. With what New England did in the Falk situation to Atlanta last night, I'm not all of a sudden going to forget all the mistakes that were made defensively by the New England Patriots against bad quarterbacks, bad teams, and bad scenarios and be like they're back. And now they're just going to steamroll the NFL. They probably will, because remember, and I've said this umpteen times 9 to noon, and it's getting close to Halloween. But for those who listen closely enough and remember, you know, it's a conversation I had in like 2013 or 2014 with McLeod Bethel Thompson, a quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. Got to know him well when he played here. He spent like a month with the New England Patriots that year in like 2014. And McLeod Bethel Thompson said, Belichick's awesome. He does it a certain way, and he does not expect players, coaches, or anybody within the administration to be as up to speed as he is until Halloween. And if you're not, you're out. You're either out or you're not playing.
Yeah.
Or you're out. And it's right around Halloween time. So this is when the pedal to the metal, this is when New England goes pedal to the metal.
Time to go to work now.
So expect Patriots to probably draw away. Kansas City's lost two in a row. Philadelphia's good, very physical on the offensive and defensive lines. They get to Lane Johnson back tonight. Very good right tackle. I like their bruising nature with LeGarrette Blount and the way they can throw it. Carson Wentz has been fantastic. So, yeah, on paper, from where we sit right now, Eagles best in show in the NFC. The whole thing this year is wide open.
Up for grabs.
With Juicy A-Rodg down, eliminate that team. Atlanta is having a significant power outage with new offensive coordinator guy. Dallas got three touchdowns from Zeke yesterday. That's going to be a team with which the NFL will have to reckon late, but they don't play defense. The LA Rams love their coach, love their quarterback, love Aaron Donald. I think there's still fairly or some question marks there. You know, specifically when it comes to closing games against good teams, the LA Rams 2 games ago had a chance to get a 2-game lead on Seattle and was throwing into the end zone where my guy Cooper Kupp dropped an easy touchdown that would have beaten the Seattle Seahawks. So there still are some problems within that covenant. So whole thing's wide open, man. Why not us?
Why not us?
2017 Vikings, 2000 Ravens. They play defense, we play defense.
After looking at it, I can see some very, very key comparisons, yeah. Paul.
They had questions at quarterback, so do we. They had some injuries, so do we.
Why not us?
Why not us? Time to text Minnesota Vikings Chief Operating Officer Kevin Warren to make sure Kevin Harlan and Westwood One don't roll into the box.
Mission Minneapolis.
Super Bowl 52. What's up? Who do you think the Vikings offensive MVP is through 7 games? 800-320-5326, 651-989-5326. Vikings-related calls off the victory yesterday over Baltimore, winning 3 consecutive. Timberwolves fans always here for you. What do you think of this new mix through 3? Hung a dirty loss in walk-off fashion against Russell Westbrook and the Oklahoma City Thunder last evening. 800-320-5326, 651-989-5326. Vikings offensive MVP through 7, Vikings football, Wolves basketball, and your home. 800-320-5326, 651-989-5326. Call now.
You're listening to PA.
You shouldn't even be able to work Foot Locker.
On the Fan.
Well, all right. Start ya. Citizens of the universe, recording angels. We have returned to claim the pyramid. Partying on the mothership. I am the mothership connection.
One receiver right, dealing in motion to the left of Case Keenum. Tailback Latavius Murray gets the call. Sprints up the middle, 25-20. 15-10, 5! Touchdown! Latavius Murray's first touchdown with the Vikings kicks the lead to 18-6.
P.E. guy in New Prague, it's 9 to noon. Good morning.
Hey, P.A., good morning. I wanted to ask you if that 2000 Ravens offensive line, did that have a guy by the name of Jonathan Ogden?
HOF left tackle.
Yeah, that's a big boy there. I was wondering if that comparison would come up. But speaking of offensive line, did you hear that chatter yesterday with the Vikings offensive line on some of those run plays? We have three centers now pretty much on our offensive line in the middle there. And boy, do they love to talk. I mean, they had the point of where they're saying, you know, I don't know what dummy calls are or whatnot, obviously, yeah. But they're just having a full-on conversation. I was wondering if you heard that as well. I'll hang up and listen.
That's a sneaky cool point because Elfline's a rookie. The guy to the right of him started many games as a center. Jeremiah Searles has played center, but Nick Easton has played more center, even though Easton was out. So between Elfline and Berger, when it comes to identifying the right linebacker per the right protection, communication is very important. And to have Berger to the right of Elfline, that's a really sneaky good point. Jeff, good morning.
Yes, hi.
What's up?
Yes, just about the offensive MVP so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I think Adam Thielen's the man.
Why?
Because through seven games, he's had about 520 yards. I believe he's played six of them, I think. And if you take that over a full game season, that's about 1,300 yards. And he's kind of stepped it up a notch from signing the contract, and I think he's
right.
I think he's been the man.
How do you factor in the point Thielen has no touchdowns?
I think touchdowns are huge, but I think that to get to the red zone, you gotta be able to move the ball, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think Thielen's moved separating and getting open, and I think that's, you know, with Diggs being hurt too, I think Thielen's pretty much separated himself with being that key person so far.
I appreciate your phone call. Have a good day.
You too.
King David Minnetonka, good morning.
Good morning, PA. My main man, how you doing, buddy?
What's up?
Few things. Offensive MVP already I have between three. It has to be either Case Keenum, Jerick McKinnon, or Adam Thielen.
Why you like McKinnon in that mix?
Well, with McKinnon, how he's been running, he's just such an aggressive runner this year, and I just love it.
Right.
Plus getting in the end zone.
King David with a popper-like cell phone connection. Hey, King, you still there?
Yep, still here.
Yeah, your cell phone situation sucks. So fly with your point.
All right, and then the other thing is, I love how the T-Wolves are playing this year, just especially with Wiggins and that three at the buzzer last night.
Yep, that was really cool, man. That was very cool last night. After the San Antonio game, I was disappointed in a few things. Not necessarily that that I completely became immersed in the hype, but I just wanted to see better against a Spurs team without Kawhi Leonard. There was a play where Jimmy Butler or Wiggins got lost on a baseline screen. Danny Green hit a three-pointer from the corner, and it just was reminiscent of late game situations so frequently with Timberwolves teams that would be right there with decent teams, crafty teams, teams that know how to win and not able to make that one defensive play at the end of the game. They went on the grind Friday night against the Utah Jazz. Utah fired a bullet. The Spanish kid fired a second-half bullet. But I do firmly believe if Jazz sharpshooter Rodney Hood had not left the game with injury, that game might have gone the other way. Because with Ingles and Hood, that they were getting loose from three. And they came to the spot looking to win that game for Ricky Rubio, and they had a good shot. Hood goes down, Crawford gets hot, there's your dagger. Last night was flat, stone-cold entertaining. Higher scoring game, Wolves looking like the right side the majority of the way. And then the MVP takes off late. And Westbrook was unbelievable. And I thought Jeff Teague, from a quarterback standpoint, represented pretty well last night. And you know, with him and Butler and Wiggins and Taj Gibson and Karl Anthony Towns and Gorgie Jang when he plays, Bielitsa when you know, the times he plays, there will be some work in progress to this team, but I'm starting to see some components to this team that are becoming very entertaining. Defense, you know, shutdown defense against Westbrook Carmelo and Paul George and Steven Adams, who's a sneaky good center. That's a lot to ask for, to shut all of those guys down for 48 minutes. But they got the money last night. It's all good. Pizza delivery guy, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I got to echo the feeling thing. I think there's a reliability. And that's my daughter. Hold on. He's a super reliable. And even though there's not a lot of, you know, a lot of passes being thrown.
Sounds like you have David Sinekin on your lap after A-Rodge went down.
Oh, yeah. And the Ravens comparison, that crossed my mind too, PA. I was thinking, I mean, they didn't start. They started pretty strong, but they had similar components. The only thing that's a glaring type difference that I would see, especially later on in the Ravens season, they were scoring points on punt returns, kickoffs, kick returns. And against the Giants in the Super Bowl, they scored so many different ways. If we had, I'm not going to say it, if we had Patterson, oh my goodness.
We, you know, with this comparison that the producer put together for the 10-5-5, 2017 Vikings, 2000 Ravens, why not? You know, a lot of it had to do with the way Baltimore was constructed defensively, had some questions offensively, found a way to take down the prize. But it also, from a timing standpoint, played into the fact that the Ravens were in town yesterday. You know, and maybe a few weeks ago when the team throttled the Buccaneers, you know, maybe after that Bucs game, maybe we should have taken 2017 Vikings and looked back at 2002 Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Ooh.
Warren Sapp, though.
Yeah, Warren Sapp, Brad Johnson, the game manager, and that defense.
Yeah. John Lynch, Derek Brooks, Rondé Barber, Donnie Abraham.
Dexter Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they were all over the place. John Gruden is the coach. Thunder and Lightning with Warwick Dunn and Mike Allstott. Who knows? With the way the Vikings are constructed, maybe 0-2 Ravens was the bet for the segment. Justin, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
So I just go with Case Keenum. Case Keenum, by far, he came in right after Bradford gets injured. Steps right in, has a great game. He's been taking over the offense. He's been having great play calling. And it's got to be him. I mean, he's got pulled out of the one game. Bradford comes back. He can't make the rest of the game. Case jumps right in, finishes the game. We get a win.
I can't argue with your MVP because, like I said earlier with the analyst, if you go from Bradford to a guy who's throwing the ball to the other team or is, you know, borderline incompetent, your whole season's over. So the general manager, Rick Spielman, had myriad opportunities in the offseason, including Taylor Heinicke. Myriad options in the offseason with who to bring in case you need this individual for 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games. He opted for Keenum, and it was a great call. You know, but out of the bye, if Bradford's knee is good, Keenum is Keenum, and Teddy is edging closer, I'm very curious to see which way this quarterback situation goes. If you tell me Bradford is the guy, he was in the preseason and in the New Orleans game, Bradford mostly is my guy. And the only reason it's not Bradford, for me, 95% should be the guy, because, I mean, he's a better pocket passer than Case Keenum. He throws the ball a more of a rope. He doesn't leave receivers hanging out to dry as much as Keenum. And, you know, I mean, Case has made plays. Don't get me wrong. Sam's a better quarterback, with all due respect. But, you know, with Bradford last year, there were times during the course of the season not having Teddy, I missed Teddy's mobility in certain situations behind a bad offensive line. We talked about it a lot 9 to noon last year. Can't run the ball, got 12 different offensive line combinations, 5 left tackles, and the quarterback can't move. Well, the offensive line is better, the running game is better, so maybe the importance of a quarterback breaking the pocket is not as significant as it was last year. Must concede, when Case breaks the pocket and bootlegs left or right, like, there was a play yesterday. It was when they bunched 3 tight ends, David Morgan, Blake Bell, and Kyle Rudolph, in a triangle formation to the right of right tackle Mike Remmers. Case Keenum went on a naked bootleg. And in breaking the pocket, he forced the hands of some defenders for the Ravens as Rudolph banged on Terrell Suggs. Then Rudolph takes off. And there he is, because you have linebackers, defensive linemen, safeties, and everybody tripping on Case running for 15, 20, or 25. There's Rudy wide open. So those are things you can do with Keenum you otherwise cannot do with Bradford. Taylor, Cannon Falls, good morning.
Hey, what's up, PA?
What's up?
I know the flashy pick is to choose Keenum as the offensive MVP, but it's got to be the Minnesota Moving Company.
Think it's not?
It's got to be.
Which one do you think's been the best of said five?
I think it's got to be Riley Reiff.
Riley Reiff?
Keeping the quarterback standing upright, trying to keep him healthy as much as we can.
Right. Yep, I cannot argue with your submission. It's difficult to differentiate between these players and units and the coordinator and all that. Defensively, it's a grinder, man. I mean, Everson Griffin has 9 sacks. But does Everson Griffin have 9 sacks because Danielle Hunter has 3 and a bunch of hurries? And Brian Robinson had 9 hurries in the Packers game. How much does that help Everson? How much does Linval Hungry help Everson? How much do all of them help Kendricks, who in turn helps Barr? And they all help Harry the Hitman. You got Xavier and Trey Waynes on the proverbial island doing that one-on-one thing. And then Terrence Newman at 39. You know, the Vikings are number one in the NFL for yards after catch defensively. Receivers are getting it, and they're getting buried. 4 yards per catch is number one in the NFL. Defensively, also defensively with the run defense, the Vikings have allowed 7 runs this year of 10 yards or more. Number one in the NFL. The ultimate team game has a bunch of people complimenting each other. There really are no MVPs offensively or defensively. The MVP, as Kings of the North, would be the team.
You're listening to PA.
You have an excellent eye for talent. You know, I mean, that's been pretty evident on this show. You know, most of the time, you're pretty dead on. I would have to say you probably are more dead on than some of the general managers, actually.
On the Fan.
Programming on the Fan brought to you in part by Cars for Kids. And check this out. Morris Day and the Time are going to be at Mystic Lake on New Year's Eve. I got a pair of tickets so that you can go see Morris Day and the Time on New Year's Eve at Mystic Lake Casino. First person to call me and tell me something very, very simple. Morris Day, native of what city? That's all I need. 651-989-5326, 800-320-5326. Pair of tickets, Morris Day and the Time. Thank you, Mystic Lake Casino.
There's a few here by kneeling, but that's inconsequential, as Breeze does, and that is going to be the final play that the Saints must run. Wasn't easy. The Saints had to fight from behind.
That courtesy WWL and the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
The Head Cheese.
Hey, David.
Hey there.
Sorry about Cam Newton yesterday.
Cam Newton.
Yeah, he lost to the Chicago Bears. With that loss, Green Bay is that much closer to last in the NFC North.
I always love that one.
Yeah, I'll worry about that in early January. That's what we're kind of trained to do. We don't worry about the standings in October, my friend.
Well, that was, I mean, you, A-Rod and the Packers and Jackson and Minnesini, you would October for show and December and or January for Doe. But with that quarterback yesterday throwing for 87 yards and a super special passer rating of 39.9, the Bear, copyright Dan Cole, the common man with the Bears, objects in your mirror are closer than they may appear.
All right, you know, have your fun. It's good. It wasn't a great day at the office for my quarterback. I'll blame my coaches just as much for not taking the training wheels off and making things far too vanilla and then instructing him to throw the ball out of bounds rather than take chances. It was not the first game I had hoped to see, but as you know, I was concerned about the first one. Hall of Fame quarterback on one side, first career start on the other. Everybody had to step up to beat New Orleans, and frankly, it didn't happen on either side of the ball, most importantly on defense.
Geronimo Allison had as many receptions as Jordy Nelson. Come on, David, what's happening, man?
Hey, you know, for me, the biggest thing to take out of the offense's performance yesterday was Aaron Jones rushing for 131 yards at about 8 yards a clip.
Of course it was.
Showing that he's ready to be the lead back in this offense that may have to, you know, be tweaked a bit to be more of a power running offense over the next 6-7 weeks if A-Raj comes back and if the team's in the mix for him to come back. Aaron Jones was a slice of optimism from what was an ugly second half of football. You know, PA, I had to leave the game. I had to leave the house, take Jackson to a couple basketball games at halftime, and I felt pretty good, up 14-7, couple picks. Defense was kind of shaky, but looked like this might be our day. And the second half, things just fell apart, and coaches have to take a lot of that blame, I think.
How did the kid play?
Played pretty well. First game, ninth grade competition, little fall league, varsity coach coaching, and the boys won one and lost one, and Jackson had some deucey dimes. It was fun to watch.
And the silence you hear is Lambeau Field.
You think he'll ever hit a straight-on bank shot three to dagger Russell Wilson like Russell Westbrook like Andrew Wiggins did last night?
Oh, man, I hope so. We were watching that and jumped off the couch. It made what was kind of a miserable afternoon awfully fun. That was NBA basketball at its finest. In a game the Wolves tried their best to give away, Wiggins would not let that happen.
It wasn't a tough day yesterday for Jackson. He's a Vikings fan.
Correct. No, he did kind of tweak his back, though, on a shifty move that was a little too fancy for its own good. So he was in pain watching that game. But he was happy with his Vikings and feeling good about where his team is.
In your face, Milwaukee!
So anyway, what's next? You got the off week. It comes at a perfect time. So what's next for the super special green and gold?
Yeah, got a bye week to hopefully get Morgan Burnett back on the field because the defense desperately needs him, get that offensive line healthier, and devise a way to believe that Hundley can hit his receivers and give him a chance. Packers have two of their next three at home, Lions and Ravens, with a Bears game in between. Got to win two of those three. You know, if they're two of those three, they're 6-4, and hopefully just three games away from a Rodgers return. And, again, just sort of staying within shouting distance right now is all we're worried about, because we had the same experience in 2013 when Rodgers was out, and last year at this time we were looking up to the Vikings, and we all know how that ended.
Yeah, circumstances are obviously a little different this year, right?
Yeah, it looks like it, maybe, but you know, you guys will be 6-2 in a few weeks. You'll head out for 4 out of 5 on the road, and it's going to get a little dicey for your squad, too. So
yep.
We'll see where the dust settles after Thanksgiving and see where everybody's at.
You think we have the best defense in the NFL?
I haven't watched everybody. I think you probably have the best defense in the NFC. Houston and Jacksonville are pretty imposing, but what the Vikes are doing right now is impressive. And Ravens aren't going to scare anybody, let's not kid ourselves, but Anthony Barr is playing at a different level, and you guys have it going on all three levels. So I'm not going to diss your defense. It's playing good football, but you don't get to play Joe Flacco every week.
In your face, Milwaukee!
So, why do you think driving to the House of Pain yesterday, U.S. Bank Stadium, why do you think I enjoyed Packer Preview yesterday maybe more than I have in the last 5 years?
Because you knew that Rodgers wasn't going to be playing for my team? I don't know. You tell me.
I don't know. I mean, there was like a pall cast over your radio show yesterday, and I'm not talking about Paul Bearer or Allen. It's like, you know, you guys need to move on, okay? Aaron didn't die. He's going to be back one day, okay?
I think you could listen back to the podcast of that show. I don't think I cast a pall at all. I didn't pick the Packers to win the game yesterday, but I certainly believe that my team's going to stay in contention. And if Rodgers is ready week 15, I think everything's available for my team. All hopes and all dreams are still available if number 12 can get back. And I think this team can hold things down and stay in it until then.
What if you lose out of the bye against the Kitties?
That's pretty much a must-win for my team. Yeah, if you drop to 4-4, two straight home games, you're going to have to win a game or two you're not supposed to. But got 2 weeks to get ready. Packers traditionally pretty good out of a bye. Mike McCarthy has to have a lot more confidence in that quarterback and allow him to make some plays. But Aaron Jones looks like the real deal, and that's going to make this offense pretty legit if and when Rodgers comes back.
Sunday, November 26th. You are nationally televised. As of now, it's flex time at Pittsburgh. I heard you yesterday on a Juicy Packer Preview talking about Rodgers being like a 10-point swing in the point spread.
Yep.
If that's the case, then the Steelers will be favored by 9, 10, or 11 points in that game.
Yeah, that's a pretty big number, but yeah, it's possible. Depends what my team does between now and then, and if Ben decides not to quit and believes in himself, yeah, that might be. That's not a game I'm expecting to win, PA, of the last 8 or 9 on the schedule at Pittsburgh on Sunday night. A win there would be a big surprise, obviously.
Well, we will soften up Cleveland for you in London this weekend, just in case you're concerned about that December 10th game at the Dog Pound.
Oh, you're having some fun. God, just like last year, you were having so much fun 7 weeks in.
Oh, you make me laugh. Oh, man, I love you're the best. All right, God bless you. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, I'm glad you're so happy. It makes me happy that you're happy.
Gotta
go. Good
luck
to your squad.
See you later. David Senekin. Hey, Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood tomorrow. Join us for the feast. Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood tomorrow. Paul Charchi and yours truly. That is 9 to noon. Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood tomorrow. See y'all at 9. Producer Rap Shop.
Thank you to the Paddy Wagon, as always. 61st and Nicollet. Delicious burgers. Go get one. The Paddy Wagon. So Keenum was the case that they gave us. 5-2 rolling right now. Can he save us? He ain't perfect. He's a backup, but he's sacked up. And Everson has opposing QBs all smacked up. And speaking of winning, how about the howl? I think for a second last night, I saw a crack in Tibbs' scowl. Final shot needed greatness from Andrew's son. Drained one from 30 feet, saying can do and done. Gophers beat the Illini onto the pig. Wild get a win in Alberta. That was big. Weird seeing Gardy take the Tigers gig at D-Dubs in Maplewood tomorrow. Can you dig?
Yeah, that is my... Never heard anyone in my life who's more insane than Paul Allen. Because he's a homer. You think Paul Allen's a homer?
For everybody.
Nine to noon.
Time for two more.
Personal foul. Clipping.
Managing the mood swings.
The game is over.
That much else to say.
I know, right?
Listen back to a podcast of today's show. Visit the Paul Allen Channel on the iHeartRadio app or go to KFAN.com.